Well, I will continue with some readings from Letters on Yoga. This is again from volume 22, page 439. Well, as I told you, we are repeating quite many things because these are all individual letters. So obviously some points are bound to overlap. So let us take the new ones and go to the common points. The psychic being stands behind mind, life and body, supporting them. So also the psychic world is not one world in the scale like the mental, vital or physical worlds, but stands behind all these, and it is there that the souls evolving here retire for the time between life and life. If the psychic were only one principle in the rising order of body, life and mind on a par with the others, and placed somewhere in the scale on the same footing as the others, it could not be the soul of the rest, the divine element making the evolution of the others possible and using them as instruments for a growth through cosmic experience towards the divine. So also the psychic world cannot be one among the other worlds to which the evolutionary being goes for superphysical experience. It is a plane where it retires into itself for rest, for a spiritual assimilation of what it has experienced, and for re-plunging into its own fundamental consciousness and psychic nature. You see, the first part of the letter is very interesting. I think we had discussed this once in our class, but let me take it up again. The psychic being stands behind mind, life and body, supporting them. So also the psychic world is not one world in the scale like the mental, vital, physical worlds, but stands behind all this, and it is there that the souls evolving here retire for the time between life and life. And again he says, so the psychic world cannot be one among the other worlds to which the evolutionary being goes for superphysical experience. You see, this question of the standing behind, I think we have to understand that a little deeper. See, one is, well, we have seen many a time this picture, we have drawn a picture saying that there is the mental, there is a vital, there is a physical, that is the outer personality, and behind the outer personality is the psychic being. That is easy to comprehend. And between the psychic being and the outer personality, there is a subliminal. There is a subliminal and there is also the inner world with Annamaya Purusha, Pranamaya and Manomaya. So we can see the four layers as if the outer being, mind, life and body, the subliminal, the subtle physical, subtle mental, subtle vital, then there is the inner being which is the three Purushas, and then the fourth one is the central being and the psychic being. So these are the four layers of our being, out of which the largest, I mean the layer, the one that occupies the most space is the subliminal. The outer being is hardly like the tip of the iceberg. Although we give so much of importance to this outer being and think that this is the sole thing in us. On the contrary, this is only the tip of the iceberg. Almost, if this is a 1/10, we would say another 5/10 is a subliminal. Then the 3/10 is the inner being and the 2/10 is the psychic being. If we say it kind of the, from the point of view of the largeness and the space it is, it occupies. Now this psychic being standing behind, we understand. Now what's interesting is the second one. So also the psychic world is not one world in the scale, like the mental, vital, physical worlds, but stands behind all this. So again he says, even the psychic world stands behind all this, and it is there that the souls evolving here retire for the time between life and life. You see, each time we speak of the psychic being going to Ananda Loka or going to its own world, psychic world, we have always imagined that the psychic world is up there, beyond this mental world, beyond all these worlds, up there. But that must have created some kind of a problem in our understanding, that Sri Aurobindo tells us, when the psychic being leaves the body, you see, it does go to the, say, the subtle physical or the vital world. And if we are too much attached with this physical materialistic world, then we don't, our soul doesn't go to the psychic world. He says it comes back. The lower, the closer it is to the earth, the faster is its return. That having said, then where does the soul rest, or is it that it doesn't rest at all? If it rests, where does it rest? Even if you say it is the subtle physical or the next to the vital, say somebody is extremely attached to the vital passions and desires and all that, we said he doesn't go, the soul doesn't even go to the mental world and to the beyond. And yet the question is, it's not transmigration. Like the Greeks told us, Plotinus maybe, it doesn't come back immediately. So there is some resting period for the soul somewhere. So where does it rest? It is not going to a psychic world, and yet it has to rest somewhere, in some world. So there we now understand what I have told you long back, the mother explaining the same thing in a very beautiful manner. She said, supposing we have a wall, and you put a ladder on the wall. So what happens? You have every rung of the ladder, from every rung you can touch the wall, if not touch physically, literally. On that level of the ladder, there is the wall, is still visible. On the second level, on the vital level, the wall is again there supporting you. On the mental level, there's a wall supporting you. So she would say that wall is the psychic world. Or I think she explained this in the context of the divine. Yeah, I remember it was the question of the divine behind all these things. So if you take the divine as the wall or as the psychic world, then what happens? The soul that is there on the level of the physical, it can go on its own level to the psychic world and come back. But taken in the other sense of the divine, Wise Mother was explaining was that the divine is there on the physical level also as powerfully as on the vital and the mental and the spiritual levels. So we said that the transformation can come at any level. It's not necessary that we should start from above, the spiritual, the mental, the vital, the physical and all that. Because there's a divine at every level. Divine is there on every level manifesting himself. So an athlete can have an experience of the divine in the body without knowing the psychic being, without reading any Bhagavad Gita or any scriptures or practicing spirituality. Because he connects with the divine on the physical, because the divine is there supporting the physical. It's not that the divine is there on the vertical level. It is there on the horizontal level, parallelly. Well, maybe if not parallelly, if I put the image of the ladder, is easier. That gives you a sense of the physical being the farthest from the wall, and the top, that's the spiritual being closest to the wall. So that image would be better for us to understand. So the divine influence on the physical is the most difficult, because the physical, the last rung, is the farthest from the wall. So as we go up the ladder, the wall is getting closer. So similarly in our spiritual experience, as we go up the ladder, we find the divine more and more, much closer, more intimate, more available, it's easier to contact. Whereas on the physical level, it's the most difficult. So similarly we can apply the same thing to the psychic world. Because if the psychic world is similarly supporting all these worlds from behind, then the psychic being, which goes through only the vital level, goes to its own world, rests there and comes back. Then if it is on the mental level, it goes, it comes back. Then it goes beyond the mind, it goes into the psychic world, and if it is a spiritual soul or a spiritual personality, then that soul goes to its own Ananda Loka, comes back. But the rest in each one of these is different. You see, the closer it is to the physical, the faster it comes back. That means the internatal rest is not long. And that means it doesn't have much time to plan, because it has so many things to develop here on the material level. Because the person there has been so attracted, attached to the physical, that the soul had no time to develop into the mental, vital, mental and spiritual. So that is the disadvantage, or the advantage, whatever you want to say. So the psychic being does go its own world, but being closer to earth, it returns faster. So it is not an evolved soul. What we say is not an evolved soul. The higher the soul is evolved, it gets on the higher plane, is the Ananda Loka. And when it gets into that Ananda Loka, it really rests long, because it has imbibed a lot of experience, it has become a spiritual endeavor, it has done a spiritual endeavor. So it really ruminates over all that, stays long, and it has the capacity to choose. But at the lower one, on the lower rung, there is no choice. It doesn't have much of a choice. It has to immediately come back, take on those vital attachments, physical attachments, work themselves out in innumerable births. So that's why we said this para is of great importance. And then further, point number two, for the few who got out of the ignorance and entered into nirvana, there is no question of their going straight up into higher worlds of manifestation. Nirvana or moksha is a liberated condition of the being, not a world. It is a withdrawal from the worlds and the manifestation. The analogy of Pitrayana and Devayana can hardly be mentioned in this connection. So, this is another clarification, that nirvana, there is no loka, there is no world as nirvana loka. Nirvana is a condition of liberation. So you feel liberated from manifestation, you don't come back. Now the next one, the condition of the souls that retire into the psychic world is entirely static. Each withdraws into himself and is not interacting with the others. When they come out of their trance, they are ready to go down into a new life, but meanwhile they do not act upon the earth life. There are other things, other beings, guardians of the psychic world, but they are concerned only with the psychic world itself and the returns of the souls to reincarnation, not with the earth. Of course, this you understand, there is no interaction between the psychic beings in their world. They are almost entirely in the psychic trance. So it is not that, you know, the souls go beyond and then they meet again each other and then they say, hey, we met up on earth. So there is no communication or interaction between souls up there. They are in a trance. And each withdraws into himself and is not interacting. But when they come out of the trance, they are ready to go down into new life, but meanwhile they do not act upon the earth. So when they are there, they have no connection with the earth. I mean, what is happening upon earth, they are not even aware of because they are in a trance. When they wake up from the trance, they are ready to descend. But in that internatal rest period, is really cut off from the earth and its manifestation and its problems. Now there are other beings, guardians of the psychic world, but they are concerned only with the psychic world itself. You see, this is another concept that you should understand, that each world, each plane of existence, like you said, illumined mind and over mind or higher mind or intuitive mind and all the levels, each is a plane of consciousness on which there is always a guardian. You see, each plane has its own inhabitants, like earth has its inhabitants called the animals and the world and the men and the people. So we are the inhabitants of this material earth. So there are inhabitants on every level. But like we have our own gods, innumerable godheads. So there are some, what the mother would call, formata. That means those who have formed, they are like the guardian angels. They are the protectors of this world. So each world has its own protectors. So similarly, the psychic world has its own protectors or guardians. But they are concerned only with the psychic world itself and the return of the soul to reincarnation. What do these guardians do? They don't have to protect the psychic beings, there are already divine beings there. But these guardians counsel the psychic being in its reincarnation. So the psychic being, when it reincarnates, as we'll see in another letter, one thing is what it decides before it leaves the birth, it leaves the body. Ashwamedha says the psychic being choice at the time of death does not work out the next formation of personality, it fixes it. So there is a decision of the psychic before it leaves the body. It fixes it, that means it has some direction, that in my next life, I will take this direction. You see, in that direction, say it's the question of the wealth or the perfection or wisdom or action, whatever the line of action. So the broad line is decided, but then the details will be decided later. And in that later, it is these guardians who influence and counsel the psychic being. So there is the guardian to counsel, there is the decision that it has taken itself. That is what Sri Krishna would tell us, that at the moment of death, what you decide matters a lot. That will determine your next birth. But Ashwamedha clarifies, it doesn't determine, it doesn't work out the details, it fixes the direction. But again, Ashwamedha explains in the essays on the Gita, normally you cannot wish for You see, these are the two different things that we should understand. It's not what you wish for, that next life, you know. I used to have a guardian here when I was in the hostel. In her last day she had cancer, she was a jipma. I used to visit her. She would always say, "Anand, I'll come back to the green roof of the ashram." She had joined the ashram pretty after much age. So she didn't go through these groups and, you know, the real ashram schooling. So she had a great desire to come back to the green roof. Now that is her desire. But what is the soul desire? What we are talking is about the soul's wish. Sometimes, yes, maybe the soul's wish and your wish are one and the same. But your wish is more or less, you know, determined by many factors. But the real point that Sri Krishna and Sri Aurobindo would both point out in the essays of the Gita and the Bhagavad Gita is that in order to wish, to have the last dying wish, as you say, you must be having the living wish. Then only it becomes the dying wish. Otherwise, suddenly you cannot, you don't know when you are going to leave. You cannot say, "Hey, I am going to die, let me start wishing this." It's not possible. Like we have the falling star and you said, if you wish at the time of the falling star, you cannot wish. When we were children, we used to sit in the playground, I think now some of the children must be sitting. Sitting in the open, we used to see sometimes the falling star. By the time you see it and wish, it is gone. What does it mean? That your aspiration must be constant. So in that constancy, when you look up, there's a falling star, it's already, your aspiration is already ignited. You don't mentalize and say, "Hey, I want this," that one is gone. So similarly, the death also we never know. Even though you know you are going to die, that second, that minute, nobody knows. So you cannot kind of, you know, bring out your wish. It must be the aspiration of your life. So here you speak about the decision of the psychic being. So in this it tells us that there is the guardians who are concerned with the return of the souls to reincarnation, not with earth. Next one. Yes, a being of a psychic world cannot get fused into the soul of a human being on earth. What happens in some cases is that a very advanced psychic being sometimes sends down an emanation which resides in a human being and prepares it until it is ready for the psychic being itself to enter into the life. This happens when some special work has to be done and the human vehicle prepared. Such a descent produces a remarkable change of a sudden character in the personality and the nature. Well, that's a bit complex there. This is a question of some advanced souls sending an emanation. You know, for example, the soul of Sri Ramakrishna. It's been said that the emanation of that soul had come into Pavitra, one of the ashram old disciples. So he was the reincarnation of an emanation of the soul of Sri Ramakrishna. And that Pavitra, you can imagine what kind of a yogi he was here. I mean, he was the so-called, not registrar, what was it? Yeah, registrar of the school. So he was again, as you know, a fabulous sadhak, one who had done tapasya. I mean, you could see, I mean, now we understand, it's not that as children we understood that the amount of tapasya is done really shows something like, you know, Sri Ramakrishna coming back. That was what we say, ghor tapasya, you know. An immense tapasya which hardly anybody could parallel. So he was an emanation of that soul. So sometimes souls don't, the psychic being does not reincarnate fully. But that's why he's saying the advanced psychic being. So Sri Ramakrishna is obviously, you know, what is an advanced psychic being. He was an avatar himself. So of that psychic being, one emanation comes into one human being and practices that. Next, usually a soul follows continuously the same line of sex. We have discussed this. If there are shiftings of sex, it is as a rule a matter of parts of the personality which are not central. So it is not that the soul takes completely an opposite sex birth. If a soul has chosen to take the male or the female, well, I haven't come across the word for eternity, so I cannot use that. Normally that's what is meant here. Follows continuously the same line of sex. Well, here too, some people may be disappointed that forever I got to be a woman or forever I got to be a man. Both will complain. It's not that only women complain or men complain. But is that an advantage or a disadvantage or a curse or a reward? Well, let's go a little into the philosophy of that. Because for the soul, actually, you know, it's been explained by the mother that what happens in the origin of the birth of this creation, you see, there are different aspects of the divine, like the other four aspects, we know about that. So each soul is given birth into one of the aspects. To manifest that Maha Saraswati or the Mahalakshmi or Mahakali or Maheshwari, because there are certain clusters of soul who always take up one aspect of the divine. Birth after birth, they will take different births but in the same follow-up line. So they are always incarnating. You may argue now, if a certain fellow is all the time an intellectual fellow, then woe be gone, he will never be an artist experience or he can never be a laborer experience. Now these experiences can be there, but why a laborer could be a wise man is not that simply a PhD fellow in a university is a wise man. A simple farmer can be as wise as any doctorate or any scholar. What it means is that there is a line of the descent of the souls. And in this line again, there is a male and a female, according to Purusha and Prakriti. You see, these are the eternal two divisions of manifestation, Purusha and Prakriti. So some souls take the line of Purusha for good, and the others take the line of Prakriti. So this is again a dual aspect, like Purusha Prakriti is a dual aspect of manifestation. Without this dual aspect, there cannot be a full manifestation. So too it is nothing in the eyes of the divine, no one is in lesser or higher or more important, less important. There is no gender difference there. It is the aspect of Shakti or the aspect of Purusha. So each soul decides that I'll manifest. And I will be the Prakriti aspect. The other soul says, no, I will take up the Purusha. So it is there right in the origin of the birth of the soul that this division takes place. So it is not the question of man and a woman. It is the question of Prakriti and Purusha. A Shakti and the Purusha aspect. So in each of these births, they will manifest more the Purusha aspect and the other person more the Shakti aspect. And again, in the Shakti aspect, there will be different kinds of experiences. But the birth itself would be the female or the male. So what it says, that the same line of sex, it is not a preference, it is not a kind of a choice. It is the original choice of manifesting Purusha aspect and Prakriti aspect. Because without each other, there cannot be a manifestation. So both have to be as powerful. Of course, there is the theory, the understanding of the male aspects in the female and the female aspects in the male. Obviously it is there. There's no tight demarcation. Because after all, this female or male are characteristics of personality. It's not just the physical differences. There is a characteristic. Some qualities are like that. Female, soft, maybe. And also sometimes Shakti, there's a manifestation. So, the male, the human, the man should have or can have these personalities of the female, and similarly the other way around also. It is not an equality of 50-50, that 50% of male and 50% of female. There's a predominance of one male characteristics. That's why you see some men are, you say, oh, he's woman-like. It is the characteristics. And some females are, we say, hey, he's like man-like. So there's a predominance. So without going into the gender difference, it is the difference of the manifestation of the original Shakti or the Purusha. That is why we call it as the continuation of the same line of action. As regards the stage at which the soul returning for rebirth enters the new body, no rule can be laid down, for the circumstances vary with the individual. Some psychic beings get into relation with the birth environment and the parents from the time of conception and determine the preparation of the personality and future in the embryo. Others join only at the time of delivery, others even later on in the life, and in these cases it is some emanation of the psychic being which upholds the life. See, this has been again a question, when does the psychic being come into the womb of the mother? So there are different stages. One is before, at the time of the conception, and that will determine the preparation of the personality. I mean, this is the case when we heard of the mother herself, that when she was first conceived in the womb, then all the goddesses and the gods, they came to prepare the womb of the mother's mother. So you see, in our Shastras, Puranas, when they say, you know, the Gautama Buddha came, the dream Mayavati got, Maya got in the name of the white elephant. These are all symbolic, but there is a meaning that the gods themselves are descending into the womb of the mother to prepare the womb. So all these great personalities, avatars, vibhutis, in our stories sometimes we always say, oh, Shankaracharya's mother got this dream. It is not just a dream, it is a symbolic dream that the god or one particular goddess or Maheshwari or some aspect has come to prepare the womb of the lady so that this great psychic being can come into the womb. So this birth of the great personalities is preceded by the preparation of some other godheads. So that is one. So he says, some psychic beings get into relation with the birth environment and determine the preparation. Others join only at the time of delivery. So that's again interesting thing. Just at the time when the child is coming out of the womb, at that time the psychic comes in. And sometimes it has been said around the fifth month, but actually I do not have any memory of having read that line, although in my childhood I have been told in our classes that is the period, there is one alternative. But frankly I cannot vouch for it because I have not seen that sentence myself. And others even later on in the life. Now this is an intriguing thing, because if the psychic being comes after 3 months or 6 months or 2 years or 3 years, How can the body survive without a psychic being? Because have we not seen in the life divine that without the psychic there cannot be a body, without the body there cannot be psychic manifestation? So if the body is already there, how can this, it exist without psychic being? So he clarifies it, saying that it's some emanation of the psychic being upholds. So the psychic being itself will not come fully, but some emanation will go into that body and the body can remain alive. Because without that emanation, the body is dead. So it is, there's an emanation which makes possible for the child to live that long. And it should be noted that the conditions of the future birth are determined fundamentally, not during the stay in the psychic world, but at the time of death. I was just talking to you about that. The psychic being then chooses what it should work out in the next terrestrial appearance, and the conditions arrange themselves accordingly. So this is, you see, when we said fundamentally, not during the stay in the psychic world. So in the stay in the psychic world, the guardians only kind of, you know, counsel. They don't choose your next life. Next life is already determined at the time of death. So what he said later on in the next letter, that it does not work out the details, but it fixes it. The direction of the birth it fixes. But there's a counseling by the guardians in the higher worlds, in the psychic world. The psychic being then chooses what it should work out in the next terrestrial appearance, and the conditions arrange themselves accordingly. Note that the idea of rebirth and the circumstances of the new life as a reward and punishment, or punya and papa, is a crude human idea of justice, which is quite unphilosophical and unspiritual and distorts the true intention of life. Life here is an evolution, and the soul grows by experience, working out by it this or that in the nature, and if there is suffering, it is for the purpose of the working out, not as a judgment inflicted by God or cosmic law on the errors or stumblings which are inevitable in the ignorance. You see, this is a marvelous clarification regarding karma, and I think we'll come across that much later in the later chapters in the Life Divine. So this question of suffering or pain or comfort or riches or problems, this has nothing to do with this question of the souls, the karmic law which says, you know, you have been punished because in the past life you have done like that. In fact, as we have been telling ourselves, that everything is taken with the purpose of the growth of the psychic being. Sometimes it may grow faster in suffering, sometimes it may grow faster in riches. So we don't know where. So please do not connect our present sorrow and suffering and comfort and success and failure, anything to do with the karma. Because as we said, you know, karma is a law. It has prepared some kind of a ingredient, some kind of a contents, useful for the other births. You know, say, if I have, say, in my own context, I prepare a course for my teaching. I prepared a course, a well-written course, a well-studied course, which I may use after 5 years, but it's not necessary that in the next semester or the next year I must use it. So whatever I have done well, it remains. Which my psychic being in one of his birth cells may say, hey, you did work out very well, a good course, I will try to use that. That is the karma. The content that you have performed, you have used, you have kind of framed up, they remain as part of your credit. But it doesn't mean that the soul's choice of the birth, rebirth or the next birth depends on what karma I have left behind, or what are my ingredients, or what are the lessons I have prepared. You see, after 5 years back, if I come back to teaching, 3 years I'm in America, 2 years I'm out of country, Then if I say, hey, Belu, you remember I have prepared a very good course on philosophy, bring it out, I want to teach that again. So that prepared thing that is there is my karmic thing. So it's not that karma is also wasted. It is a lesson, it is an experience kept there for the use of the psychic being in its subsequent births. So the soul thing, please remember, which is, so he says all this question of punya, papa is a crude human idea of injustice or justice. It's crude, it has nothing to do philosophic. Because life here is an evolution. This is the central sentence. Is here an evolution, and the soul grows by experience, working out by it this or that in the nature, and if there is suffering, it is for the purpose of that working out. So let's not look down upon somebody who is suffering, saying, this fellow must have been a criminal in his last life. This is the human thing. Na zaroor kuch kiya aapke pichla janam mein jiske liye suffer kar raha. You know, these judgments are so, I think he has used a very courteous word, unphilosophical, but in a normal word, it's so stupid. So we should not really wag our tongue to judge somebody saying, zaroor kuch kiya. This kind of a notion, at least after being with the Life Divine for 12 years, I suppose you do not repeat that. Those of you who are the stalwart students. So let's not judge anybody by the karma. On the contrary, we may not understand. Sometimes it's very, very difficult to understand, I tell you. But at least philosophically we know, well, I don't know the reason for this soul's why it is suffering. Obviously, philosophically, Sri Aurobindo has told us, this is again for its own growth. Sometimes I told you the soul, the psychic being, I mean, the mother somewhere explains, you know, that normally, it's a normal human thing that we all know, I mean, it's a common knowledge, that we really remember the divine in sorrow. In success, you never do that. So she was telling, in success, if you can really show your gratitude to the mother, to the divine, to Sri Aurobindo, then something is done. But normally, 90% we forget, we immediately put the success in our name, and we have a party in our name, and we are part. Because I have done the success. But the moment there's a slap, you forget that it is yours. You say, oh Lord, you know, please come and help me. You send letters to the mother, go to the samadhi and blah, blah, blah. So sometimes, you know, this, as you're saying there, not as a judgment inflicted by God or cosmic law on the errors or stumblings which are inevitable in the ignorance. So once you come upon earth, some share of sorrow is there, even if the soul comes, you know, for its own growth and quick thing, quick progress, it cannot avoid some stumblings here because this is the world of ignorance. Why, even in that context we know, even avatars are not spared of this suffering. Savitri is full of those lines where he writes how every avatar who has come to save us suffers. So when an avatar has to suffer in this world of ignorance, what about you and me? Well, that is some of the things I think we have to close here.